listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And you are listening to State of the Art.
We'd like to thank our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit www.breakdownexpress.com.
Our thanks also goes out to performingartslive.com, Paul, for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar.
And Anderson Trophy Company of North Hollywood joins us again today, Michael. And since it is awards season, what better sponsor to have than one who makes some of the most beautiful awards and trophies for any and every occasion, be it the arts, sports, or for corporate events. Anderson has been providing quality trophies for decades. For more information about their products and how you can benefit by having the best for less, call Anderson Trophy Company at 818-765-3770. And Michael, I just want to comment that I saw the trophies that you guys did for LA's Next Great City.
Yes.
Show. They were beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, very attractive.
Well received.
Yes. I posed for those, you know.
You did?
I did. I posed for them.
Which part?
What? The one where the hands are
oh,
up like that?
Yeah, oh, that
I'm
part.
I'm gesturing
okay.
with my hands
yes.
up.
Yes.
I haven't really
that's
grasped
because you've
radio
gone on
yet.
You've gone on that diet
yes.
recently.
And yes.
I think that was a recent pose, wasn't it?
It was a recent pose, yes.
And
actually, from the neck down, I am totally gold.
And
I
and a eunuch.
And a eunuch, yes. You yes, yes.
I see.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Paul, coming up with us today is Mary Pat Donovan, the revered second to none. That would be N-U-N
Oh, wait, I'm
star.
Sorry, Michael. Would you say that again, Michael, second to none?
Yes. I said also with us today, Paul, is Mary Pat Donovan, the revered second to none star of the hilarious comedy series, This Time Until Death Do Us Part, Late Night Catechism 3, a stage series getting ready to open March 3rd at another one of our historic theaters, the Pasadena Playhouse, and their Kerry Hamilton Theater is where Mary Pat will be. Welcome, Mary Pat.
She is in studio with us. Welcome,
yes,
Mary Pat.
Is. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm really excited to be here.
Good to be here.
People
happy,
are clapping and everything.
Yes,
it's
yeah.
wonderful.
They travel with us wherever we go.
They're real quiet indeed. Otherwise.
They're also very uniform with their... They all stop at exactly the same time.
It's something special.
They've been traveling together for a long time.
They have. They're called applause extras. That's what
yes.
they're called.
Yes. You know, if only someone would invent a company where you could get extras inexpensively.
Because
when you have people, they have all these papering services. You know,
yes.
They have all these things where people come in and just like, you know, and... Because those of us who have done shows, especially in Southern California, in L.A., I don't know, in a lot of the country right now, getting people out to the theater is truly one of God's great mysteries. And
yes.
getting people out in Los Angeles, where they're so used to driving everywhere and not wanting to drive at the end of their workday, is a battle. So later in the show, I really do want to talk about something that Mary Pat talked about before.
Yes, I think it's a valid
which is a special kind of extras. Services.
Absolutely.
Seat fillers.
Yes, seat fillers.
Seat fillers,
yes.
if you will, yeah.
Yes.
So, Paul, how was your week?
I also want to explain the one more laugh, hopefully, if
oh,
there
yes,
is one
okay.
more laugh. My friend Peg Burr is visiting from Chicago.
Peg
She's
Burr.
With us. She has insisted that she not speak on air, so I'm going to honor those wishes. But if you hear a fourth chortle, hopefully, you'll hear a fourth chortle. You'll know who that fourth chortle is.
So, can you give us a little of that chortle?
No.
So we,
yeah,
there you go.
There we go.
There you
yeah.
go.
It's there she is.
It's nice. The shoes. It's the boots.
It's the boots.
It's the boots.
Yes.
She's almost 6'1 with these boots.
She is.
She's 5'2,
she
I think, when she walked in.
They're nice boots, too.
Yes,
so, Michael,
are.
How was your week? Before
it was
we get
good.
To Mary Pat.
Went to a couple openings, Paul,
really?
In town, yeah.
And what'd you go to see?
Rock of Ages, the national tour that stopped into the Pantages Theater.
With all the REO Speedwagon type music?
All of that music, all of that rock and roll music. And so I'll be talking about that later in the show, reviewing that, and also to a wonderful show called Broadway's Ethel Merman.
Ethel Merman?
Yes, at the El Portal.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And starring the lovely Rita McKenzie, who was scheduled to be with us today, but unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, something came up in her schedule preventing her from joining us. But I will reference that show a little bit
maybe
later.
Maybe she's at another opening, another show?
Perhaps. Well, yes, there you go.
Sorry.
Now, she does an incredible job.
I should rim shot myself.
There
I'm
you should.
Do
you
jokes
should.
That bad.
Really?
I should probably do that.
No, but she totally embodies the spirit and the mannerisms and certainly the vocal ability of the great Ethel Merman. So it was quite an extraordinary experience. And actually, you know,
oh, Ethel Merman.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I thought you said Ethel Mertz.
No.
Ethel Merman.
That's a whole other show.
That's not as interesting.
Yeah. No. But it was a wonderful celebrity opening. And one of the nice things for me, Mary Pat, was that I was able to spend some quality time with one Mitzi Gaynor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw a picture of her recently, and she looks fantastic.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
She is almost 80. I think she's 78.
Wow.
And looks as young and as alive and wonderful and interesting and gorgeous and dressed to the nines and still that beautiful body and those fabulous legs.
Now she was what her big thing was South Pacific.
South Pacific brought her into the movie fame. Yeah, right. Playing Nellie Forbush. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But she was a star before that.
No, I know. But for people like me who aren't as versed in that world as you are, I would have to just cling to South Pacific.
Well, there were so many great people there. Hal Holbrook and Jane Withers. You remember Jane Withers? God bless her. She was there looking in all of her finery. And Stephanie Powers. And really a lot of interesting people like that that would know.
You said Tippi Hedren was there.
Tippi Hedren. Now, there was a beauty. 80
really?
Years old.
How does she look at 80 years old?
Honestly, 45.
Wow.
Really? And not Hollywood 45.
And not a Hollywood 45. Right.
I was watching The Birds last night. She's really something.
Yeah.
And you were watching The Birds last night?
I was, night? Yeah, we have a food truck, actually, and we screen movies on the side of the food truck, and last night we were showing The Birds.
Oh, really?
Her
is
and,
it a, your
Suzanne
own
Plachette.
Personal
Yes,
food
it
truck?
Is. We have a food truck called Jose O'Malley's. And
But where do you keep you mean
last night we were in Hollywood at the Siren Studios.
I thought you meant you had one at your home.
Well, no, not at home. Well, nice though, wouldn't it?
Convenient, yeah.
I have two dogs.
That's a great idea though. Mm-hmm. You just show it on the side. Because I used to do the Hollywood Memorial Park Cemetery. Did you know what they show movies in the cemetery?
Yes, on the Hollywood Forever.
Yeah,
yeah.
On the side of Douglas Fairbanks' mausoleum.
Right, I live three blocks from there.
Oh,
they
really?
Also do Shakespeare in the cemetery there, too.
Do they really?
Mm-hmm. I saw Hamlet there.
Oh, how's that go over there?
Well, it was really an interesting setting. The play was not really good.
Well, the people were dying to get
like,
in, weren't they?
Really were killing.
Where's my rim shot?
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Used to the technology.
Yes, I know. It's all. I'm all. Here I am doing
working
all this,
some,
and I'm getting corrected by Mr. Stack of Papers in front of him. I did not know that they did live theater out there.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm.
I went to see...
And comedy. They have they're doing some stand-up comedy. There's a Masonic Lodge that has a big theater in the cemetery.
The stand-up comedy in the cemetery?
And they're doing... Yes.
Is this thing odd?
I think it's called To Die For or something is the name
That's
of the show.
That's funny.
Or Laugh Yourself to Death or something.
Because, I mean, the thing is, the grounds, it's beautiful grounds.
You know what? In Hollywood, there is no parks. There are no parks. They have 3% of the parks that you're supposed to have on a national average.
Oh, really?
They have no parks, and so the only place really that's green at all is the cemetery. So the cemetery is used for a lot of stuff.
And what I really appreciated when I went to see it... Have you ever done it, Michael?
Been to the cemetery.
Yeah. No, for the entertainment.
At the cemetery?
Yeah.
No.
You haven't?
No. Is this the same cemetery where Marilyn Monroe is buried?
No.
Marilyn
Monroe is
on the west
there.
Side.
Jane Mansfield is buried there.
Yeah.
Jane.
Yeah.
And Rudolph Valentino.
There's
a
number.
I thought Marilyn was buried there.
No, Marilyn is on right near the breakdown offices, actually. There's one on the west side. That's where Marilyn is.
Maybe I was mistaking it for Jane.
But what I really appreciated having gone there was... People really do sort of not only respect the cemetery and the grounds, but they respect the process of watching something in a cemetery. The seats are all very low. You know, they have a fold, like a folding chair rule or something that has to be like one of those beach chairs that's low. And people, I mean, hibachis and,
right, and
food
picnics.
And picnics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a blast. It was a lot of fun. I went during... I saw the Muppet movie there, which was kind of unique because it wasn't on VHS and it wasn't on DVD, so it was like the first time people got to see it since it came out, and that was actually rough because that was packed. I mean, it was.
So, but are people sitting over people's graves?
Or no, what? There's
no
grassy section.
There's a whole like knoll area
and a mausoleum. They show it on the side of the mausoleum.
Yeah, on the side of the mausoleum.
You gotta admit, it's a little creepy, isn't it?
And Well, yes and no.
It's not because of the amount of people. The humanity, there's so much activity in life and everything that you're just like, I mean, you realize you're in a cemetery, but it is much more park-like.
Yes. One of the most amazing parties I was ever at was the Dia de los Muertos celebration that they have where they get 30,000 people. And the first time I was like I was in a Fellini film. No lights at all in the cemetery except for candles on the graves and candles in the altars and, you know, hundreds of folk altars. And
oh, my gosh.
What a party 30, that was. 30,000 people.
What happens,
where
though,
did they put them?
Where did you park for that? You like all logistics.
Where do they put all the vehicles?
I don't know. I live only a few blocks from the
right.
cemetery, so we walk, you know.
Okay.
And parking is an issue, I guess, but
no.
What a party. What a
wow.
party, 30,000
What if the
people?
Whole place went up in flames, though? It would be kind of like hell or something. Like they'd all gone to hell.
It's all stone. It's all stone. Nothing's going to
really?
Burn. Yeah,
that's
going to burn. All that glass is.
Really?
All right, on to livelier topics.
Yeah, emphasis on live. Absolutely. So, Paul,
what did
Grammy Awards, I know we're on.
I saw the Grammy Awards.
As we said, the Grammys, you saw it.
Speaking of death warmed over, I saw Bob Dylan on the Grammys.
Oh, God.
It was unsettling to me because I'm the biggest Bob Dylan fan. There's three big people for me. It's Bob Dylan, it's Leonard Cohen, and it's Tom Waits. Those are the three that, you know, I like my vocalists that require an expectorant. That's basically, I need Bonnie Tyler, Joe Cocker, that sort of thing. But I was a little unnerved by Dylan's performance. It was just a little unsettling.
How did he look?
He didn't look good, but, you know, I mean,
He never looked good.
Yeah, no, he didn't look good at 22.
No.
You know? But it was just the performance was just very sort of... They were also ironing out their technical issues. I think there was a big technical issue with his microphone. But the joy of watching him perform, though, I have to say, was the guys behind him. Everyone performing behind him...
Young guys.
...was just the energy that came out of them, like... Okay, we're on the Grammys and we're backing up Dylan. Was just like the greatest thing to watch. So really, really. And then, of course, watching the resurrected Don Knotts perform. Oh, I'm sorry, it was Mick Jagger.
Oh.
But it was hard to tell because he looks exactly like Don Knotts.
Really? Now.
But God love him, man. 67 years old, still burns it down as a 29-inch waist. Just unbelievable. Guy must be running... like 23 hours a day.
You think?
Performing.
Or
yeah.
Maybe not.
And
eating.
He was great. Solomon Burke had passed away, and they did a little tribute to Solomon
mm-hmm.
Burke. And they did what song did he do? Everybody Needs Somebody was the song that Jagger did, and enjoyed watching it.
So it was just short of, had Lucille Ball been around, she would have been on this show.
Yeah.
Was that it?
She'd been singing.
Yeah.
She would have been.
Yeah.
You don't watch the Grammys, huh?
I don't. No, I don't.
You love the award shows.
I
Why do. Why you skip out on the Grammys?
You know, I wasn't home this year to do that, and I didn't record it on the DVR, and it's so long, you know, and a lot of those people, quite frankly, I don't know who they are.
No.
I don't know who they are.
Well,
they were before my time.
How about Barbara Streisand?
Oh,
yes,
she was
I
in
heard.
An Iron
what
Maiden
happened?
Outfit. She couldn't like move. They just propped her there in this thing, and it was kind of that was the sad
well,
part for me.
Paul's
singing Evergreen.
Peg
Paul's
had a
guest.
Peg had a different take on it, but she doesn't want to talk.
Well,
so I will tell.
She was quite chatty at lunch, wasn't she?
She
about
said.
This?
She said actually, she didn't say Iron Maiden. She said it sounded like she had an iron lung.
Yeah.
Because it was just like
in an iron lung. Because I mean, she didn't move at all, and her dress came way out.
Yeah.
She was like frozen.
It looked like she was stuck in the frosting on the top of the cake.
Is she the one that has the stage fright?
What? Yeah.
One
she
of them
has
yes, stage
yeah,
fright.
She had the incapacitating stage fright. Which yeah. I want to talk about stage fright because
okay.
we were talking about one person shows
yeah.
and the catalyst, but we'll get to it later. But the catalyst for my one person show was exactly that, was combating stage fright. Because I started to have really bad stage fright. And that's why I figured, how do you stare down the dragon? You do a one person show. There's really few things more terrifying than that.
But wasn't there an issue with Barbara's vocal? I mean, other than maybe sounding raspy? Peg said that she would be singing into the mic and then move away
song.
The mic, and it was still
yeah.
at the same volume.
I would have picked a different song
yeah.
over her.
Yeah? Well,
she
it was Evergreen,
I mean,
right?
It was Evergreen, and I don't know.
Who would sing Evergreen? What was the choice? What do you think?
I don't know why she picked it other than they had Chris Christopherson introducing her.
Yeah.
Well, because then it was from the movie.
From the Star is Born.
There you go. There's the connection.
Maybe it's not that hard for her to sing.
We have a call coming in. Should we take it?
We do?
Yeah.
Oh,
should we just find out who it is?
It might be Rita McKenzie.
I don't know. Could be.
Is it 818?
I'm not here.
I'm going to answer because I always let...
Please do. We always...
Yeah, and if it's American Express, I'm a different Mary Pat Donovan.
They never know that they're immediately on the air, but let's see if they know in this case, okay? You've reached State of the Arts on LA Talk Radio. Who am I speaking to? And it's just that easy. Yeah. Okay. I'm so glad we answered that call. That was magical. Okay. What were we talking about?
It was probably Rita.
It was probably Rita.
State of shock that no one answered.
I'm sorry, I'm not there. Does that sound like Ethel Merman?
Not at all.
Did it?
Not at all.
This is American Express. Okay, let's talk to Mary Pat now.
Yes, well, let's give her a proper introduction.
Okay, do you want to introduce her?
Sure,
or shall
I will. You want me to?
Please do.
Yes,
please.
In 1993, our next guest co-created the truly hilarious Late Night Catechism. She also originated the role of Sister in that production and has been the star of virtually every production of Late Night Catechism, the stage series, throughout the United States, London, Dublin, and Toronto. In what has become a trilogy of top-notch entertainment, she brings not only her own habit, but everybody else's, to the stage of the Kerry Hamilton Theater at the Pasadena Playhouse beginning March 3rd. Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Mary Pat Donovan.
Oh, we're clapping again. Thank you.
How are you?
In and out they are.
In and out,
yes.
Yeah, suddenly.
Yes.
I'm great. I'm really great.
It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you.
I watched on your website, I believe it was, some of the clips from this particular show.
Mm-hmm.
Truly hilarious. Till death do us part.
It's my favorite. It's the fourth in the series, and it's my favorite.
Oh, it's the fourth.
Yeah.
Okay, there's
it's called Three.
Three.
But that doesn't include the Christmas show, which doesn't have
right.
a number.
Oh, okay.
So it's the fourth.
Okay, so I didn't make a mistake.
No. It's called Three. Late Night Catechism Three. Till death do us part.
Hilarious though, and your this wonderful approach that you have to comedy. This kind of just off the top of your head, and I guess much of it is off the top of your head, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just based on how the audience is reacting to what mm-hmm. you're saying.
It's interactive theater, so depending on who comes in late, who's got a short skirt, who's talking to their neighbors, chewing gum, who's got a smart remark, it depends on that, how the show's going to go.
You know? I love the...
Sometimes the show runs 1 hour and 35, sometimes 2 hours and 10.
Yeah?
Really?
Yeah.
That
mm-hmm.
much of a variable?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I love the remark you made about the soldier of Jesus Christ. Is that it? You're referring to an audience member fessing up
about
talking?
Oh, yeah, someone
talking?
Better tell.
Yeah.
The soldier of Christ that talked, raise your hand, and then they don't. So I'd say the soldier of Christ next to the person who talked. Raise your hand.
Right.
Squeal him. Squeal for
and
Jesus.
She's smacking her papers on the side of her thigh there at the same time. Very funny.
Jesus wants you to squeal for Sister.
Oh, that's the sound bite we're going to save. I found that I learned certain things from Late Night Catechism from the first one that I did not know until I saw it when I saw it in Chicago at the Royal George.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Chicago at the time. I mean, as much as I like the show, I would not travel from Los Angeles to Chicago to see it.
Catch it here.
Yes. But what was the term? The Immaculate Conception.
All right.
The Immaculate Conception, not referring to the conception of Jesus, but to Mary.
Mary's conception, right.
Yes.
Without original sin.
Without original sin.
Right, right.
And you would, it's astounding how many people will go toe-to-toe and say, no, you're wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
One time I had a woman who said, I teach second grade children to prepare them for their communion.
Yeah.
And you're wrong, it's the other. And I said, oh my God, I want to strangle you. I should jump on you right now and prevent you from ruining these children and giving them the wrong information. You know.
Can you imagine that headline? Nun strangles second grade teacher.
Right. Audience member killed.
Well, you've seen the show.
I have seen the show, yes. I have not seen Mary Pat do the role, but I have seen the show.
Well, I hope you get a chance to come out.
Oh, no, we'll definitely see this one.
Kerry Hamilton.
Yeah.
The
Kerry Hamilton Theater.
What do you find? You mentioned people coming in with or commenting on the people with short skirts. Do people come in knowing, like, ready, like armed for bear? Like, do some people come in dressed that way that maybe wouldn't dress that way intentionally, but they know they're going to get a rise out of you?
If they do, I think they regret it on the way home.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't bother me.
Right.
They're the ones that are going to get the comments.
Right.
You know, about their clothing and their choices.
Right.
So, maybe. I wouldn't say. Here's the thing. There are no ringers. There are no shills. It's all whoever's right. there, whatever happens, we go with it. You know, that's right. why I never know how long the show's going to go.
Right.
Because you never know what you're going to run into, you know. This particular show, I did at Laguna Playhouse, and within the first 5 minutes, I literally brought a couple on stage and married them. I swear to God, I married this woman.
And you're qualified to do that.
Yeah. I'm on online. I'm actually an ordained minister online. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you actually married them.
Well,
oh, yeah.
Yes. I brought them on stage. I said, who's been dating for 19 years, engaged for two, no wedding on the horizon? And I goaded this man, and it was her birthday, 50th birthday. She was there with 25 of her best friends and family, including the justice of the peace that was going to marry them at their wedding eventually. So I goaded them into coming up on stage. The justice of the peace married them in the first 10 minutes of the show. And the rest of the show, that poor guy was like, what happened? What happened? Is that real? Should I run? I don't. Do you know?
Yeah.
He was terrified the whole time. And then he was still there at the second act. I'm like, I can't believe you didn't run away. So, but it turned out, we found out afterwards that they weren't really married, because it used to be in the state of California, you could get married and then get your license afterwards, do the paperwork afterwards.
Okay.
But now you have to have the paperwork first, then you can be married.
Okay.
So it didn't hold up.
Yeah, but no.
But they did get married again a year later. Then they had a real wedding. They invited me to come to the wedding.
Oh, really?
Did you go?
I went dressed as the nun. I stopped the wedding when it started. I stopped the wedding. I did about 10 minutes at the top of their wedding, chastised them, teased them. Their guests went crazy, and then I just.
I love that. I did about 10 minutes at the top of the wedding.
Right. Teased them a little bit, and then they finished the wedding, and I stood off to the side I'm right next to them on the side.
Just crying
at the wedding.
Now, Mary Pat, you're Catholic.
Yes.
And you went through the whole Catholic.
16 years of Catholic education.
Like myself, through the whole school system. Mm-hmm. And that really kind of predicated, you know, your background to writing all of this, right? Mm-hmm. And taking all of it in a tongue-in-cheek kind of way and mm-hmm. putting it out there for mm-hmm. people to... taking down the Catholicism.
No, as a matter of fact, everything I talk about is true. I don't say anything that's not real or true or something you wouldn't necessarily be taught in a real catechism class.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of a spin.
You know? Yeah. Because the nuns, I remember the nuns, you know, back then. They were, and we were also so frightened of them all the time. You know, really.
Well, that's part of the teaching technique. You know, you got 9 months to teach 52 kids to read, write, do math, make Jesus their personal savior, let alone learn their names. You have to do something to get their attention, you know.
Right.
And really, they didn't. I mean, everybody acts like, oh, they beat everybody. They didn't. Once every 3 years, they grabbed some kid, beat him a little, shook him a little, and scared the rest of the kids so that for 3 years, no one goofed around. Because the ones that came after you heard Sister So-and-so beat Kevin Gibbons last year with the geography book.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I did get the ruler on the knuckles.
You did get it?
I did.
You deserved it.
Yes.
You deserved it 5 times over, be honest.
I was
only caught you that one
class.
Time.
I did. I passed a note and I was talking.
And how disruptive was that, though?
Well, it was okay because Michael had his dinner gloves on, so it was probably...
I was dressed properly and in my little uniform, and it was Sister Catherine Sienna is the one that did it. She was the principal of the school, but it wasn't in her classroom that I made this little gesture. But, I got it. And plus, it was in front of the rest of the kids, which was not cool for me.
Well, that's
did
a big...
Did you do it again?
No, I did not. And you know what, though? I guess my karma came back to me in another way, which was I was an altar boy, and I went to serve Mass, and which I looked forward to it because I was kind of on stage is how I looked at it.
In a costume.
Yeah, in a costume in front of a lot of people.
Right.
And I like that part.
This is, well, Michael, you have to explain to them how you were at the time, your natural inclination to performance at a young age.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt you. But.
No, not at all. And so I was dressed appropriately and doing my job, and I...
And looking devout.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, the one thing that was a responsibility of the altar boy was to have changed the linen on the silver tray, that would go on the silver tray when the priest is doing the wine and water and the host preparation.
Right.
And I couldn't find a clean linen. Backstage, or back in the...
Backstage, in the sacristy.
Backstage.
And
I couldn't...
There's a key phrase right there. I looked
on the prop table.
Yeah.
I looked.
And I found what was the least wet of the previously used linens from the earlier masses. And I chose that, and I kind of folded it in the way it should have been folded, and kind of smoothed it out. Had I an iron, I probably would have ironed it. But
you should have asked the stage manager for that.
Yeah, but I couldn't find one, not one in sight. And I took it out there, and I come out, and I'm very proud, and I'm carrying the thing, and I'm, you know, I know all eyes are upon me for the exchange. And the priest, when he picked up the towel to wipe his hands, of course, did a double take at the towel, and took it and smacked me across the face with it in front of the entire congregation.
Wow. And you thought the nuns were bad.
Yeah. Jeez. I'm serious. I was mortified.
What did you do?
I what could I do? I had to stand there and take it.
What did he say to you?
He didn't say anything to me during the Mass. What he did afterwards. Don't you ever, you know, it started with that. And why did that, how did that happen? How could that have happened? And it was clearly was not my fault.
You know, what a smug person to do that to you. How full of himself would he have to be?
Yeah.
To slap a child across the face.
Exactly.
With a wet towel.
And I was good looking too. I mean, you know,
you're hitting an altar boy. I mean, that's
at Mass in front of everyone because they gave you the wrong thing.
Tomorrow we sucker punch the Easter bunny. What's next? That's
but
I'm one of the few Italian Protestants, actually.
We went through this.
My father was converted.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
My father converted from my mother because my mother was Protestant. My father's Italian Catholic. And it was very confusing because every time we'd go to my father's family, you know, so that side, you know, we didn't know when to stand. We didn't know when to kneel. We didn't do anything because the Protestants are lazy. The Protestants just sit there. There's maybe one kneel. You know, and it just...
when you're coming in and going out.
Exactly.
That's about it.
Although I did get very involved with the Catholic school and church in my town because we did Jesus Christ Superstar and I played Jesus.
What?
Yes, I played
not
Jesus.
Not possible.
What do you mean not possible?
Really?
I played Jesus Christ Superstar. I played the role of Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Did you have long hair?
Yeah, I had long hair and a beard. I was 22 years old. I was about 160 pounds, so I looked like Keith Richards after the accident. And no, but it was a very fun production, you know?
Wow.
So I got very involved in that.
I'm impressed.
And, of course, then my mother, we decided we would take Father Stubbs out to dinner, even though we weren't Catholic. We would take Father Stubbs out to dinner because of the whole thing. And then my mother got cut off driving Father Stubbs back to the rectory and swore a blue streak with the priest in the backseat of the car. I'm just like, yeah, that's my mom. She's like, oh, sorry, Father. Sorry. But I want to talk about, you know what? We should do our arts calendar, Michael.
Well, you know what? Before we do that, I just wanted to ask her one last question here in this little segment. Mary Pat, you've done this show or some version of this show in all over the United States, Chicago, Boston, Rhode Island, New York, Toronto, Seattle, Portland, Dublin
Ireland,
and London.
And London.
And do you find the European audiences any different?
In London, they would flip over three times and go backwards around the block three times before they would commit to being any religion.
Really?
Really. It was very difficult to say, what religion do you belong to? And you'd have to drag out on that they were Anglican. They didn't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in Ireland, I thought it was going to be a big love fest, you know, because it's a Catholic country. It is the exact opposite.
Really?
The Irish hate the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church is responsible for a lot of the misery in the country because they have no divorce, they have no abortion, they have no birth control. They have none of that stuff because the Catholic Church is in charge. It's a Catholic country.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big backlash against the nuns. And they wanted me to be real razor-cutting sarcastic against the Catholic Church. And here I am, you know, telling my little jokes, thinking I'm cute. They were not having it.
Wow,
they were
that's
real
fascinating.
Rough on me in Ireland.
Wow, that's fine. Never would. They wanted you to
drunk all the time. They're drunk all the. They're drunk all the time in Ireland.
She was gesticulating.
I was. I was.
Something else they don't do
in the
Catholic Church.
It was the ice.
Yeah, in my highball glass. They sell Guinness everywhere. Everywhere. In the theater lobby, there's a bar, and everyone drank Guinness, and everyone was half in the bag.
Really?
Half in the bag, drunk, to the point where there was a man was so drunk, he came in, he talked out loud through the whole show, and then at the end, he got up to leave, staggering to leave during the curtain call, and everyone else was like, sit down, don't walk. And I was like, let him go, just go. So he got off stage, and it was the theater hall was all black curtains, and I was dressed in black, and somehow I got into the hallway with him in the dark. Because there was a blackout, and when the lights came up, I said every swear word I could think to say to him, real bad in his face, and then disappeared through black curtains. And he was like, I thought he was having some kind of DTs or something.
This drunk, disembodied head.
Every swear word this nun was saying into his face, and then just disappeared in the curtains.
I've had this dream before.
Oh, my God. I was so mad.
Oh, my God.
It was rough. Ireland was rough.
No. I mean,
how long were you there?
I was there for 12 weeks. 12 weeks.
Wow.
I thought you were just going to say one afternoon.
St. Andrew's Theater.
Oh, man.
It was rough.
And what were the reviews like?
They loved it. I mean, the reviews were good. I usually get pretty good reviews for the show.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Toronto, the review was the worst review I ever got in my life. The reviewer said that she would rather have a root canal while watching her parents have sex and see Late Night Catechism.
Oh, no.
If you're going to get a bad review, that's when you should.
Well, I tell you, that and there's no issues with that reviewer at all. Yeah, if those are those two
she
things.
She did laugh the whole time really hard.
Yeah. Oh, reviews went in and out the window for me when I got the best review and the worst review for my show at two reviewers that were at the same performance
the same show,
and seated nine seats away from each other.
Yeah.
Best review was Chicago Tribune, worst review Chicago Sun-Times, same night, same performance.
It happens.
Yeah. But one of the reviewers was Hetty Weiss from Chicago, who is
half a
bubble off plum, as they say.
She give you the good one or the bad one?
The bad one.
Yeah.
When David Mamet writes the Chicago Sun-Times and says, fire this woman, and they still don't, She was the one who did the whole thing about Wicked being a thinly veiled interpretation of the concentration camps.
Remember really?
Yeah, the whole thing about that. How that basically what Wicked the musical was.
Wow. And she's a primary reviewer there?
Yeah, and she is... She's just, as I said, a couple of tacos short of a combination plate.
Now we have an arts calendar.
Okay, Paul. Shall I?
Yes, you shall.
What if you were suddenly faced with the now or never chance to leave your spouse for your lover, no messy strings attached? Would you take it? Set on September 12, 2001, less than 24 hours after terrorists brought down the World Trade Center, The Mercy Seat introduces lovers Ben and Abby. Ben was supposed to have been working in the Twin Towers on that fateful day, but was instead playing hooky with Abby, his mistress and boss. Suddenly, the two see a new possibility for their future that didn't exist just a day earlier. Will Ben let his family know he's alive? You can find out, beginning with Pay What You Can previews on March 17th and 18th at Inside the Ford Theater in the Hollywood Hills, followed by a six-week run, which opens on March 19th. That's an interesting
premise
for a show.
I mean, what would you do? What would any of us do if that opportunity?
I don't know. I think the first thing I would do would be let my family know I was alive. I mean, that's kind of a biggie.
But it is that thing, where you're having an affair, and that's the priority in your life, right? And
I think it would depend on what the family was. I mean, if I had children or something like that, would you not let them know?
Well, I guess we should go see this play.
Yeah, answer the questions. But you saw a play. You saw you're reviewing one, aren't you?
I am. I went to.
What did you see?
I went to the opening of a wonderful show, actually, that was on Broadway with Constantine Morales, who is one of the finest
American Idol.
And
I
was going to say you were a little too quick with that response.
Sure. I thought he was good.
And few people know that he was classically trained. This man.
Yeah.
And. I was not preparing to take to this show as much as I did because, I like rock and roll music, but I can't say necessarily that it's the music of this show featured Journey, Styx, REO Speedwagon, Foreigner, Pat Benatar, Whitesnake, etc. But I must say that there is a story. I didn't realize there was a storyline with it. I thought it was really more like a rock concert that had some thread of something, but not as much as it did. And it takes place in 1987 on the Sunset Strip, and a small town girl meets a big city dreamer, would-be rock and roll guy, and in one of LA's most legendary rock clubs, and they fall in love, and all of this music is appropriate to the actual theme and to what is happening in the play at that time. And I must say, this young man has found a huge place for himself on Broadway. He was stellar in the performance, not only vocally. I think he's better vocally now than he was on American Idol, actually. But as an actor, it was charming and funny and underplayed everything to the point that It was like being at a rock concert.
And they're very limited with American Idol with what they can do. All those decisions, you know, about, you know, this seems to me that it would give him more of an opportunity to spread his wings and show.
Well, and it's not the only Broadway show he's done. You know, he did The Wedding Singer as well, and I think there was another one involved there too.
Plus, he had a background in theater.
Yes, and this particular show actually started workshopping out here in Los Angeles. In 2005, it was done. In 2006, it was done on a small, very small scale. And then it found its way to Broadway and became the biggest hit. And, of course, in the Broadway production, which they did not do at the Pantages, they actually served cocktails inside the theater at your seat. They had people coming up and down, you know, selling the cocktails, so you can imagine.
You also said, though, that it was very much a younger crowd, much more a rock show demeanor to the audience than a theatrical demeanor. You said people talking and the
talking and also up and down out of the seats and the cell phones going and the texting during the show, even though they make all the hilarious announcements about not using your cell phone.
Right.
It didn't make really any difference at all. All I know is that at one point I'm sitting on an aisle and someone puts their arm on me as they're walking up the aisle and said, "Michael, nice to see you." And, you know, I couldn't see his face. And I said, and he said, "It's me, John Lloyd Young," one of the Jersey Boys. And I guess John didn't care for the show, and he was leaving during the middle of the first act. So.
Well, was he the one we had on the show?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I thought the name sounded familiar.
Yeah. So it's not everybody's cup of tea necessarily, because it's not traditional, but it is in many other ways. And the theater was very smart in playing into giving everybody in the audience one of those little lighters that you light. But it's not a real flame, just a light. So everybody during the ballads was, you know, swaying their lighters, and it was, you know, it was fun. It was a fun evening.
And they actually pump the smell of pot in through the ventilation system, don't they?
Well, yeah. No, they didn't do that. But I must admit that the Pantages is, you know, thinking young with these kinds of shows, and I think that's tremendous because the place was packed to the gills. Hmm. And big party and party buses and all that business afterwards. So it was a fun evening, and I do urge people to see this. It is only playing at the Pantages through February 27th. And again, Constantine Morales reprises his acclaimed performance as Drew, the role that garnered him a Tony Award nomination as Best Actor in a Musical.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, while we are encouraging people to attend live theater in Los Angeles, let's make sure we get all the information out here for Late Night Catechism 3, which will begin performances at the Carrie Hamilton Theater at the Pasadena Playhouse beginning March 3rd, 2011 through April 3rd, 2011, with the official press opening on March 7th, 2011. Tickets are available by calling the Pasadena Playhouse at 626-356-7529. That's 626-356-7529. Or by visiting the Pasadena Playhouse box office. And tickets are available 24 hours a day online at www.pasadenaplayhouse.org. O-R-G, not .com. PasadenaPlayhouse.org. I'm sure they have a group sale. Yeah, they have a group sales thing, too. So bring friends, because it's a great thing to see with a group, because then you get to see your friends objectified by a nun rather than yourself.
That's right. also, give them a piece of gum before you go in there.
Yeah. Give a piece of gum.
Set them up.
Give your friend with a short skirt.
Short skirt and a low-cut blouse.
Yeah, there you go. we were talking about one-person shows outside. I did a one-person show for a number of years, and... I was telling you, Maripet, that I think I passively followed you across the country, different venues and things like that. But I actually wrote it because I started to have pretty incapacitating stage fright. I used to have borderline anxiety attacks about performing. So I said, let me stare down the dragon and do the toughest thing that a performer can do, which is a one-person show. But the show was actually the least difficult part of it for me. That once I was on stage, everything was great. What I wasn't prepared for, which I don't think a lot of people think about, is the downtime leading up to it. Like, the hardest thing for me was not 8 o'clock on. The hardest thing for me was 7:30 to 8 o'clock. When you have
you're in the dressing room alone.
You have no camaraderie. You have no safety valve of other people to talk to. You have no, commiserate about last night's performance. Oh, wasn't that audience crazy? Wasn't that audience terrible? Wasn't that audience great? And how Did it bother you? Does it bother you? Is it something that you've found a way to deal with? You've done a one-person show far longer than I have, and I'm just curious how you, if you had any issues along those lines, or if, like, do you ever think, I found going back and doing plays with other people, I found it almost like an exhale factor. It's like, oh, there's other people here.
Everything's to talk to.
Yeah, there's something, and everything's not on my shoulders, so that responsible for the person's whole evening, you know.
You know, you make up for it. You talk to the stage manager. Somebody comes in the queue. The sound guy comes and talks to you or something.
Right.
You know, you have your friend there or something. But yeah, I never was afraid of it or had any kind of a problem with it. But it's an issue.
Yeah.
When you're by yourself, you travel by yourself. You have to, you know, this kind of thing you do.
Right. I find that yours too has to be. It's almost like when I saw Late Night. It's almost like there's not really any. I couldn't sense any performance anxiety because there wasn't. You're almost like hosting a party. You're almost hosting an event
mm-hmm.
that people are coming to, and they're as important an aspect of the performance as you.
I mean,
because it is, like you said, interactive.
Right.
So that has to be a lot of, you know, you're basically going out to meet the people,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And something, you know, I never say who's out there, what do we got. I never look for any hints about what the audience is like, or I never ask the box office to find out anything. Although I do have a list of the audience from the box office, so I can call on them.
Oh, really?
It's a class list, right? One of the things that happens. Look, she's sick to her stomach. One of the things that happens during the is that the first class, she's the substitute. She has no idea who's there, what's going on. But as we build these classes, she's been put in as the permanent teacher by the bishop because she's so much better than stupid Father Murphy.
Oh.
So now it's her class. So she gets the class list and she has it.
Okay.
There's nothing like the jolt of electricity that goes through the audience when they know that you have everyone's name who's there on a piece of paper in front of you.
Oh, that's
when you
funny.
Call a name, when you say, you know, Susie Martin, stand up and answer the question. There's this like, oh my gosh, you know.
Yeah.
And then Susie Martin, who's obviously terrified that you have her name, stands up and has to answer the question.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Especially if she doesn't know.
Right. Right. But and they don't know, right?
Mm-mm.
Because is it just from the credit card orders?
Yeah, it's from the box office. I asked the box office to type me up a list of maybe 50 names and make them real big so I can read them. And then I just leave it on the desk. And
oh, that's
hysterical. Sister has a laptop now. So she looks at their laptop to see.
She has a laptop?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
laptop. We're fully into the 21st century.
Okay. And I want to ask you something else because you talk about, you know, you said 50 names. I just started thinking about people in attendance. And we often need to do things to pump up audience, you know, to, like you said, you did the...
Put butts in the seats.
Put butts in the seats, as they say. And you told us about a particular service. Well, first of all, tell us about the doing... the retired nuns and the work that you've done with them.
Right, well, you know, I work, one of my things I do is, since I started working on this show, I've realized the position that retired nuns are in. It's really bad. They don't have any Social Security. They don't have pensions. They have nothing. So if they don't have any money saved up for it, they've got problems.
Right.
So one of the things I do is make a speech at the end of the show and collect money for retired nuns. Myself and the other actresses have raised over $3 million.
Really?
By just asking for people to put money, audience members to put money in a bucket.
Wow.
And it is one of the best things I've ever done in my life. These plays, it's fun to write them, but the best thing is really collecting money for these retired nuns. So often, when I'm in a town, I will go and see the order that I'm collecting for, visit, they have lunch, and they take me out to the retired home, and I see the retired nuns. And then, you know, they say, could you do a little of your show for them? So they get them all in the room, in the wheelchairs, and they're not there. Because by the time they let these nuns retire, they're worn out, shot.
Right.
They have dementia. They can't walk. They're blind. You know, they're not there.
By the time they let them retire.
They let them retire. That's
Can you still walk erect? Okay,
barely,
you're still a nun.
No, really. Dust the hallway, you know, and then come and talk to me. That's what it's like.
With your habit.
So when they finally let them retire, they're just like a bag of bones in the chair, and you know. So to do the show. Or even at a portion of the show for them, they don't get it. They're nuns themselves, so this nun thing is they're not sure if it's funny. They don't know if they like you. They're confused by the fact that you're wearing the old habit there.
Right.
They don't know. And then they make the announcement before the show. And after Sister's finished, we'll have cake. Well, you might as well forget it. Just say, just skip to the cake because all they want to do is, you know, you're doing the show and all of a sudden you look and three of them have their wheelchairs facing the back of the room. Because the cake is there. And you have to tell the attendants, please turn them around. You know, what's going on? She's facing the back of the room. Give them the cake, you know. So that happens to me. But you have to let that go.
Right.
No one's, because the back of the room, there's this chasm of old people in wheelchairs, and then all the staff in the back room said laughing
right.
hysterically.
So, yeah, so you have that.
You're making contact with someone.
Which is, well, but also that's an unnerving performance dynamic, because you don't want to neglect those people in the front for those that are getting it, but it is sort of a chasm to get over.
It is, and yeah. It gives you an opportunity to make fun of the ones in the wheelchair to the ones that take care of them in the back of the room.
Right.
And okay. So then we're allowed to laugh at them and
I
have
gotcha.
Fun together.
I got you.
And we get cake when we're done.
You know, at the Pantages for the opening of Rock of Ages was an icon, a celebrity, if you will, in attendance, sitting right in the first row. So I wondered if this person was sitting right in the first row of your show, how you would handle her, and it was Angeline.
Angeline.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Angeline from the
Did she have
billboards.
A low-cut blouse?
Oh, everything was
Absolutely.
Low.
Absolutely.
Everything was low. Yeah.
She would have had some problems.
For those people who don't know Angeline, if you're not in LA, you might not. But she's sort of this manufactured celebrity.
Self-manufactured
celebrity. She had billboards and everything. I don't know if she still does. She drives around town in a pink
she
Corvette.
She still does that.
Yeah.
She arrived that way.
And she's like 1,000, right?
I mean, it's got to be.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's
she's
just
so
her,
old
that's just
that
her
now
cup
they
size.
Use cartoon graphics of her instead
yeah.
of
that's right. Oh, on the billboards,
cartoon
yeah.
Cartoon graphics to represent her,
right.
Rather than photographs anymore.
Right. They're just
so
they're
would you like
caricatures.
Go to town and have a field
absolutely.
Day on
absolutely.
Somebody like
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. No. Because she's right there in the front row and she's got the low cut short skirt, low cut blouse, and
yeah.
You know, we would have had a lot of fun with her.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure she could have used that. I think.
Now, other celebrities I've had, I have not. One time I did the show at the Jack Riley, who played, was on the Bob Newhart show a long time. Mm-hmm. He was in the group.
Yeah.
He was Mr. Carlton.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Carlson, I think his name was.
Yeah.
Anyway, he is a fan of the show and has been many times, and I've had a chance to get to know him and his wife. And one time I said, Jack, you know, when you want tickets, just call me. I don't pay for tickets anymore. Please, you come so often. One night he called me and said, bring some friends. I don't want a big deal made over this. I'm bringing Mel Brooks and Anne Bancroft. I'm bringing them in after you start. We're going to sit in the back. Don't make a big deal. They don't want to have anything. They just want to see the show. So here comes Mel Brooks and Anne Bancroft into the show, and they were sitting in the back row, but they were sitting in the back row in the center, in the aisle, so it was like they were sitting directly in front of me.
Okay.
So everything they did, I was with them in the back row. And that was probably the most unnerving performance I ever did, was for Mel Brooks and Anne Bancroft.
Uh-huh.
Anne Bancroft came and saw the show again, brought her mother, because she went to Catholic school afterwards. She said, I had Sisters of St. Joseph in high school, you know. And she brought her mother to see the show in New York, back. She saw it in L.A., then she went to visit home and brought her mother to see it in New York.
Now, was it unnerving just because it was Mel Brooks and Anne Bancroft?
Mel Brooks.
But how much easier do you think it would have been for you if you didn't feel like your wings were a little clipped by not being able to interact with them? You think it would have been easier? Or just it didn't matter?
It didn't matter.
Okay.
It didn't matter.
All right.
Because I probably would not have interacted. They were in the back. They were quiet. They were not doing anything to stand out.
Okay.
And then I never pick on people unless they somehow want to be picked on.
Right.
Either they raise their hand, they talk to their neighbor, they're wearing the low-cut blouse, they're doing the wrong thing, and then I'll talk to them. I very rarely would drag someone in who does not want it.
No, because your rhythm will go, you know, you don't want to look like you're victimizing
no.
people.
No, right. And the ones that say, oh my God, I never would participate, please don't call on me, are the first ones to put their hands up.
Yeah.
To answer the question. I'm terrified, I don't want to get involved, promise you won't call on me. They've got their hands up. They're talking. They want to participate.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, would you ask Mary Pat?
I will, but before we do, Paul, I just wanted to remind everybody about her show and also Rock of Ages. Ladies and gentlemen, Rock of Ages at the Pantages Theater through February 27th. For tickets, you can visit online, BroadwayLA.org, as Paul said earlier, and or by phone, 800-982-ARTS. That's 800-982-2787. And for the fabulous Mary Pat Donovan and her show, Until Death Do Us Part, Late Night Catechism 3 will begin performances at the Carrie Hamilton Theater at the Pasadena Playhouse March 3rd through April 3rd, with the official press opening on March 7th. And for tickets, simply call the Playhouse, visit the Playhouse box office or call them at 626-356-7529 or visit them online as well, PasadenaPlayhouse.org.
MaryPatDonovan.org.
Yes.
Okay, we have about, I think we got about a minute to go, Mary Pat. We always ask people to share their nightmare on stage story, a particular one. Can you share one with us for me?
Yes, I was doing the play in New York, Off-Broadway. We're the longest running show, one-woman show in the history of Off-Broadway in New York. Doing the show, and, you know, 8 shows a week, they got to do, sometimes they got to put the butts in the seats, and they sometimes bring in, people they let in for free. They
Papering services.
Yeah, right.
Papering service that my guy used, I don't know why, was called Hospital Extras. And you think, what the hell is that, Hospital Extras? Till you get there and you realize these people are out out for the day with people watching them from the mental hospital extras. I'm doing the show in the first 5 minutes.
This is real.
This is real. The house lights are on because you got to see them and they're in it. And a mentally ill woman stands up in the house and goes, what the hell is this? We could have seen a Broadway play. We could have gone to a movie and we're here watching this? At the top of her lungs. And she was scary. I was scared of her. Luckily, they hauled her out in the back, and I was... How do you go on after that?
I know. Well, when you know that someone in the audience thinks that you can't compare with a movie.
I would rather see a movie.
So they
and yells it out in front of everyone.
So there is no mercy.
No.
So they have, there were people with them to sort of corral.
Yeah, they have the wranglers wrangled her up into the lobby. And the whole way out, she was going, what the hell? We could have seen a movie. Let's go.
I just want to know.
Waste my time.
I want to know what that pitch is, though, when you call Hospital Extras. Do they offer a different rate? Did you want the wranglers?
Yes.
Because it's extra.
Because if you don't want the wranglers, we won't send them. Good luck.
Wow.
Oh, that's...
Well, what a joy having you on.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
So much for being here. And and so nice meeting everyone else that's sitting in the studio with us today, Glenda.
And the silent Peg Burr.
We can hear her laughing.
Yes, who's and breathing.
Yes.
And breathing. So, Paul, you know, we have to also promote our guests next week. Hopefully they'll all show up.
We have a couple of very fun guests coming up. We have musical theater and television star Jim J. Bullock from TV's long-running hit series Too Close for Comfort.
And what a funny man he is.
And Jim and Tammy Faye. He did that talk show for a while.
That's true. And the lovely, talented, and witty stand-up comedian Suzanne Wang, best known to television audiences for 10 years of hosting Home and Garden's hit television series, House Hunters.
And truly one of the filthiest stand-ups you will ever see in your life, which a lot of people don't know.
But, which is why we love her.
Hysterically funny. It? So thank you all, and we will look forward to talking to all of you again next week. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you soon.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.